WIOX is supported by Margaretville Hospital and Mountainside Residential Care Center, a member of the Westchester Medical Center Health Network, offering compassionate care at a CMS nursing home. More information at 845-586-1800. WIOX is supported by Roxbury Wine and Spirits on Main Street in Roxbury. Open every day except Sunday from 12 noon to 6 p.m. for contactless curbside pickup or delivery to your open vehicle trunk or hatchback. Selection of wines listed at RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. Orders by phone or email 607-326-6200 or Jeff@RoxburyWineAndSpirits.com. WIOX is supported by the Andes Hotel, Restaurant, and Bar. Open Tuesday through Sunday for indoor dining or heated outdoor dining on the porch. Southern Cooking on Tuesdays, Wings on Wednesdays, Surf and Turf on Friday. Menus and reservations, theandeshotel.com or 845-676-4408. 845-676-4408.
This is Jim Router, host of The Guitar Show, Tuesday morning from 10 to noon, and Nika's Dream, Sunday morning from 10 to noon on WIOX Roxbury. Live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org. And why not? Go to our website and make a donation.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXRadio.org, where it's easy to donate. If you like what you hear, you can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
It's nice today. It's in the 50s.
Yeah.
You know?
Sun was shining, and spring seems like it's here. Someone sent me a picture of a red-winged blackbird. That means something.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It's a bird that doesn't stick around all winter, so he's back. He's singing.
What that mean to you?
Spring's here.
Well, I'll tell you, another sign of spring is when you hear dripping in buckets, and the sap is running like crazy today. So that's what I'll be doing when I get home tonight.
Yeah, me too. How's the season been going for you? I know last week on the show we were just getting started. We were talking about it.
Yeah, it was good. We had a nice gradual start in central Ulster County. The trees weren't running like crazy, so it gave me time to kind of get set up. Yesterday, though, was my first big run, and I got 48 gallons of sap from 17 taps.
That is a lot.
That's insane.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, usually 2 gallons per tap is a lot.
Yeah, 2 gallons
and you're
per tap.
Like 2.5 or more. That's crazy.
They're pissed off.
Cool.
They are mad.
See, my tree's at 1,600 feet. Didn't do as well. I only got 8 gallons off 20 taps. So we'll see. Maybe they'll wake up today, I hope.
Yeah, I think so. I think they should wake up today. And if they don't, then they'll have all night to think about it.
Yeah, it's not.
And tomorrow. I don't know if you're going to freeze or not here in Delaware. I know the low is calling for upper 30s where I am. So
I don't think it's going to freeze. 36 or something like that. So they'll run all night, and we'll have lots to boil tomorrow.
Yeah. Big secret I find that people don't realize is that you do need freezing nights. They can go a day, sometimes two, without freezing. But eventually, if it doesn't freeze, they shut off. So,
right. And you'll see it coming. It'll slow way down. And
yeah, it's a weird process, this whole sugaring thing.
Yeah. And how much have you made?
Three.
3 gallons?
Yeah.
That's good.
And tonight should make something.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'm around a gallon.
Yeah.
It's a good season so far.
That's great. It's filtering nicely. Some years it filters very slowly. So I think it's because the highs haven't been that warm. One bad thing about the 50s and tomorrow it's going to be in the 60s is the sap, you know, gets dirty, you know. So that might screw up my whole filtering thing. But after Friday or so, it looks like good old-fashioned March weather, 40s and 20s, you know, temperatures, highs and lows, and that's perfect.
Yeah, that's what you want. You don't want to see these 60-degree days for making syrup.
Yeah, I don't.
I guess it's okay in the beginning, but at the end, if we saw this, that might signal the very bitter end.
Yeah. So, who knows? The last time we had, you know, 60s and then freezing at night, I remember in 2009 it did that a lot. And it was very dark syrup, which, you know, isn't necessarily bad, but it was hard to filter in. You would get up into the lower 60s and somehow plunge at night. Freeze is really strange. But you know, it's just cool. You keep records, you know, you can track this stuff over time. It's pretty cool. But what are we talking about tonight?
We're going to talk about apple tree grafting.
We are? All right, let's do it.
All right.
All right.
So how long have you been grafting trees, right?
Well, I learned about grafting, I think it was 2011. 10 or 11, I think it was 11, and this guy in his 90s, the Northern Nut Growers Association's Malcolm Olson, and I was really lucky I got into an apprenticeship, and there's only two people, myself and one other guy, with Malcolm Olson. And Malcolm Olson is the only guy in the country that can successfully graft black walnut. So
wow.
He's grafting heart nut onto black walnut, and apparently they're very finicky. You have to be pretty much perfect in the way you graft in order to graft walnuts, okay? The right temperatures, all this. You know, your slicing has to be, your cuts have to be nice. You have to be very clean, too. Apples, not so much. You can get away with a lot with apple and pears. But with walnut, you know, it's a different story. So that apprenticeship was about that, and I learned about that, and then a year or two later, I got to thinking, you know, we go to a lot of people's property, and they plant apple trees, and what happens?
They're neglected sometimes. Voles chew on their bark when they get the deep snow, and they're not protected like we saw this morning.
Yeah.
Deer will browse them if they're not caged properly. Back to the summer, if the grass isn't maintained and mulched, they're going to be outcompeted in the roots. And then when they finally grow up, if they grow up, the deer come along, they rub them and kill them that way. Or the bear rips them apart soon after that.
Yeah, true story. I mean, people got lives, you know. They have jobs and stuff that are either far away from their second home or whatever, and they're inside. They're not paying attention to their apple tree. So I thought about top working. And that's where you graft the top portion of a tree. And why not graft above the deer browse? 5, 6 feet. 6 feet. Let's go with 6 feet. And if I can graft above that, then you don't have to worry about whether the tree that you planted is, you know, going to do well in that site. The rubbing of the bucks onto the newly planted tree, browsing, voles, all that. So we can use the rootstock or the established roots of that tree and go above it. And a lot of people got wild apple trees that you can graft onto. You know, they've proven themselves. They've grown as seedlings. And why not go with that, right? So that's how it came about. It's pretty cool. I like it. You know, it's mostly successful, but let's talk about that. So we talked about the negative reasons why to graft apple trees, right? As John said, improper planting. A lot of people, they plant their trees too deep. I've done it myself. Lack of protection from herbivores. The site is too wet. The site's too dry. Usually the site is too wet is what kills trees. We have too much water. Disease, absenteeism, poor form. Then when someone does get a nice tree that grows, it's improperly pruned in such a way that you really can't get fruit from it practically.
Whether it's too tall or whatnot.
Yeah, absolutely. So, or it's just terrible tasting fruit. I mean, you know, that's where grafting comes in handy. If it's a volunteer and the fruit's not good, sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. And you can put any variety you want on there. It doesn't matter. So, positive reasons. You know, a grafted tree is going to grow a little faster. All right? I'd say maybe like 30% faster. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it depends on the tree itself. It depends on what you put on it, we've found, because we've put some varieties on that just take right off.
Yeah.
And we've put other varieties on that seem to lag a little bit and then catch up in a couple of years.
Right.
But, yeah, I'd say 30% faster is a good average.
Hey, we're down Stone Ridge in that lady's house there and onto the crab apples, true crab apples. The Ashmead's kernel grew the best, so who knows? You know, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it does. Who knows?
Yeah.
But, so positive reasons, faster growth, desirable fruit, something that's tastier, something that's disease resistant. A lot of times we just take an apple that we know is decent tasting and is relatively free of diseases in the Catskills, and hey, we don't even know what it is, but why not use that as your cutting or signwood? Take advantage of the hardy rootstock. The rootstock has proven itself that it's, you know, used to the Catskill Mountains. So because we're using wild or volunteer rootstock, and you can change varieties, you can put multiple varieties, more than one on that tree, or if you want to preserve an heirloom variety, there's a place that we go to, Woodchuck Lodge, John Burroughs, you know, the naturalist, his place, take varieties from that orchard there and spread it. A lot of times someone's old tree is dying, and it's been in the family for 100 years, and they want to preserve it by grafting it around the property onto younger trees, so stuff like that.
It could be another volunteer tree that you've just found. It could be, who knows, you know, up on a ridge somewhere that
yeah,
you just like the taste of that fruit, and maybe it's planted, maybe it's not. Maybe it's the next best thing, and let's propagate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is grafting wild apple trees. Next, we'll talk about grafting overview. You know, what exactly is grafting? You know, talk about the botany of it a little bit.
Birds beneath my window, dusty in their wings upon the lawn. Hear them in the morning like the last amen to a migratory song. They're never looking around for me, their eyes are on the sky, the ground below. I'd rather be the one who loves than to be loved and never even know. Hello, blackbird, hello, starling. Saw your feathers and confectionery eggs. You earthed it up and promised you the stars, but you really didn't care.
I sang in exaltation. I pulled the stops. You always looked a little bored. I'm singing for the love of it. Have mercy on the man who sings to be adored. Hello, blackbird. Hello, starling. Now it's long after the birds have gone to roost, and I'm not sure if I'm singing for the love of it or for the love of you. But I've flown a long way, honey, oh, hear my confession that I'll go. I'd rather be the one who loves than to be loved.
Josh Ritter. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is grafting wild apple trees. So let's talk about grafting overview and what exactly it is. So grafting, it's combining, it's a combo of the root system, or the understock, or the rootstock, with a shoot system, or the scion wood, or sign wood, as some people might call it, in order to create a composite plant. Every single apple tree you buy is going to be a grafted tree.
Yeah, most people don't know that. And I was on a walk with a CFA member many years ago. I kept pointing out these trees that they had. They were volunteer trees. And I said, kept suggesting grafting. And they said, no, I'm not into grafting. I want to be all natural. And then they take me to their planted orchard. I said, well, I thought you weren't into grafting. It's like, I am. I'm not. I had to point out to him. I said, every tree that you have planted in your orchard here has grafted rootstock. That's how they. Yeah. That's how you maintain a variety.
Yeah.
And they're shocked to learn that.
Really?
Yeah.
It's kind of like last week's show, the forest preserve foreshadow, that paradigm of preservation, no human hands.
Right.
I don't know. There's nothing wrong with being involved with nature.
Right.
I think.
Yeah. What we're talking about here is that the apples, they don't have true seeds. If you eat take a Macintosh apple you might have eaten today for lunch, you take the seeds out of the core of that apple and you plant them in the ground, it may grow an apple tree, but it will not be a Macintosh apple.
Yeah.
That fruits.
Or Sopus Spitzenberg or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
So in order to preserve that variety you love, it came from a grafted tree.
Yeah, exactly. And the only way to preserve it is to keep grafting it. And human beings love apples. And if apples could talk, I might say they love humans. Yeah,
I would hope so. We really propagate them all over the world, right?
Oh, man, we spread them, you know?
Where they can grow.
I'd say apples and dogs are probably most messed with by human beings.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Probably more so apples. There's more varieties of apples than there are dogs.
Yeah, true. So, okay, so we talked about the cyanwood, which is the cutting. That's the desirable portion that's going to make the fruit that you want. The rootstock is what it is. It's the rootstock. And usually they're hardy varieties. The rootstock also, as far as I know, controls the growth habits. So it controls whether it's a dwarf or a semi-dwarf or a standard, right?
Right, and that's going to be the size of your tree at maturity.
True. So phloem. Phloem's important. That's a vascular tissue for hormones, proteins, sugars, water, living cells. So living portion of the tree that's right underneath the bark. Right? Then you have the xylem, which is your sapwood, your wood. That's mostly for support and the transportation of water. So right now, tapping maple trees, you're tapping into the sapwood. You're tapping through the cambium and the phloem, but into the sapwood, right?
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so what's the magical spot that we're trying to graft and unionize? That's the vascular cambium, man.
Okay, so it's very thin, right?
Yeah. It's this little green portion that's just underneath the bark. And if you can join the cyanwood's vascular cambium to the cambium of the rootstock, bingo, you get some unionization.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So what's happening? They join together.
Okay, so I went to another course at Harvard 2 years ago, a year ago or whatever, right before the pandemic. And they don't really know, which I thought was kind of cool, right?
Huh.
I mean, these Harvard guys, they're like, you know, there's still a lot we don't understand why they unionize. So I'm going to leave it at that and move on.
All right, well, they unionize, and that's a very strong union. I mean, that's why you can climb an apple tree, right? You can scamper up at that. Yeah. Unionized graft is very strong. It joins as one. And everything above that graft union is the cyanwood. So it becomes the whole tree. It grows into the whole tree. And we've seen a lot of trees that we've pruned that we have assumptions that maybe has two trunks. And there's different formations of those two trunks. And they visually look different. We can just assume that one's rootstock and one's from the grafted point. They just emerge from the same location.
Right, if there's like sprouts coming up from the base of the tree, it's probably from the rootstock. That's why they'll be different.
Yeah, there's a tree behind the Open Eye Theater in Margaretville that one side of it produces a green fruit, the other side produces a red fruit. Both taste okay, so they could be two grafts, but based on its form, I suspect the green side is the rootstock.
Yeah, they're both good.
But they both taste fine.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we're going to gather some cyanwood. That's the third part. So the first part was, you know, why graft? You know, usually it's really for deer and herbivores. We can graft above the deer browse, and chances are you have some wild or volunteer apple trees growing. You know, no other tree gets that distinction. No one calls, like, a volunteer sugar maple. Only apples do we call volunteers wild trees. Isn't that weird?
Okay, another weird one. Why all the nuts are named after what their nut provides, walnut, butternut. Why are oak trees provide acorns? They're not the acorn tree.
I don't know.
Or acorns. Is the...
My kids will call them acorn trees. And I'm like, oh, it's an oak tree. But they're right on the money. They got it right. Yeah. It's true. I don't understand that. Yeah. Grafting overview was the second part. You know, talking about the botany and why they unionize. What you're basically trying to match up. And whatever grafting technique you use, you're going to have to match up the cambiums, the green to green. So now, gathering cyanwood. And this is where people mess up because it takes a little bit of planning. It's not much work grafting, but it takes some forethought. Like, if you don't have cyanwood, you can't graft.
Right.
And when April and May come, and that's when we do a lot of our grafting, if you don't have cyanwood that you gathered during the dormant season, say the fall to the late winter, then you just won't have cyanwood. So you have to gather the cyanwood while it's dormant.
And why is that? Do you know?
I have no idea.
Your grafting workshop didn't tell you that? All right, sorry.
I don't.
See, these are things I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't remember. I don't remember that, but we have seen that that's the case, right? We've tried to.
Must be something hormonal in the tree that's present or absent at that time.
Yeah.
Because once it starts growing, producing leaves, that hormone that must arrive prevents it from unionizing.
I think that's right. That sounds right. Yeah. No, seriously.
No, I'm just saying but I wouldn't know what those hormones are, what they do.
Yeah, there's auxins and all sorts of things that I have since not retained.
Yeah, well, if you're not practicing in a, if you don't have a doctoral degree in grafting, you may not.
Right. I don't know if there is a doctoral degree in grafting. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, right?
So they might call it horticulture. Who knows? But gathering signwood, do it in the dormant season. But, you probably want to know also which ones are good. So if it's a good-tasting apple tree, you should probably mark it so that you can gather it in the dormant season. So you may even have to think a little bit ahead in the summertime. Mark that tree. All right. Gather during dormant season. We said that while the buds are tight. So just brown, tight buds. Not silver tip, although you could probably get away with silver tip. They go through stages. There's silver tip. Then there's green tip as the bud starts to burst, and then you get into bloom and all that. All right, but we want to do it while they're tight and there's nothing going on. So the rootstock can be leafed out, up to half leaf or even almost fully leafed out. You can still graft onto that tree in April and May. So that's not as important, we have found. And according to Cornell as well, it's not as important either. So how about some tools? What do we need for tools?
For gathering signwood, you don't need much. You just need some pruning shears or a way to cleanly cut that your signwood off. So hand pruners work great. You need dormant trees. So we're doing this in January, February, maybe early March, depending on your elevation and what's going on with those trees. But January, February is great. You need some grafting wax, something to seal it. We use Gashel's wax. Get it on Amazon or probably many other suppliers out there.
Yeah, maybe. Everything seems to be
who knows?
Bought up these days, man.
You need rubber bands we use. That just holds the signwood together in a clump. Do what you want there. A little bit of bleach, just a little bit. 1% bleach solution. So bleach water and then paper towels to wrap those signwood up.
Yeah,
you're going to stick those in the crisper and save them for April, May.
About a teaspoon per gallon, if you want to know ratios.
Yep.
Paper towels. But we'll go into what we're going to use all those things right now. So gathering signwood continued. Last year's growth, that's what we're going after. So when you're making your cutting, it's last year's growth, the newest growth. Now, sometimes if it's an old tree, you'll think it's last year's growth, but it just didn't grow at all. A tree is healthy if it's grown 6 to 8 inches or more. A lot of these old trees, you'll be hard-pressed to find that. You might have to go on the very sunniest side of the tree to get some of that signwood.
Yep.
And you can tell how much a tree grew by going at the very terminal bud and going back until you see the terminal bud scar. It's like a compressed area you'll see along the twig.
You may see a slightly discoloring in the bark between the 2 years. And the newly lignified bark from this year may look a little bit different in color. Maybe a little more grayer, maybe a little bit more redder, depending on the tree.
Yeah, so you're going for at least 3 buds. 3 to 5 buds is all you need. Supposedly, according to Cornell, they think that, the Hudson Valley Lab, who will be on this radio show next month, but you don't want to get the really vigorous ones. Like if it grew like 14 inches or 3 feet, you don't want that. They're saying, medium, 6, 8, 10 inches, 12 inches. And they're saying the basal part of it's the best, has the most carbohydrates maybe. I don't know if they're totally sure.
Hmm.
So the basal 2/3 of the stem is the best part to use. I already said that. Okay, so once you have your signwood, you can get 2 or 3 out of one stem. So if it's 12 inches long, there could be 20 buds on there. You could get maybe 3 sections out. Whatever you cut, you should either cover it with, if it's the terminal part, cover it with wax, or, you know, we use Gashel's grafting wax to cover it. And then the base of it, as you stack a bundle of them, what we do is we wrap them in a bleach solution. So you dip the paper towel in a bleach solution, 1 teaspoon per gallon, wring it out really well so there's not too much moisture. Then put it around the base of the bundle of signwood, and then wrap that with rubber bands.
Yeah, stick it back in your Ziploc bag, and goes in the crisper.
Crisper of the fridge, just above freezing. And you are good to go. They will last months.
Yeah, we've grafted into early June with that. Yeah. From signwood collected in January, so you're good.
It works well. You're just tuning in. You're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is grafting wild apple trees. And up next, we will talk about actual grafting techniques like cleft grafting and bark grafting.
You know, I would be untrue. And you know, it seems to me that I would be a liar if I were to come up to you and say, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Children is through now, no. And I ain't got time to while I'm in the mire. Excuse me. But darling, we could only lose, yeah. And all our love become a funeral pie, but all I want you to do is
Al Green singing Light My Fire.
Nice.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is grafting wild apple trees. And first we talked about why graft wild apple trees. Second part was about, how do you unionize these grafts? And the third part was gathering signwood. And now we're going to talk about, grafting techniques. So cleft grafting and bark grafting. We'll talk about cleft grafting first. But actually, we do bark grafting mostly. Right, John?
Yeah, mostly. I don't know. Even once I tried a whip and tongue graft. That was interesting and fun. I remember while we were grafting, said, let's try it. I said, I don't know anything about it.
Yeah.
We tried it, and there was limited success.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of ways to graft trees. As long as you can line up the meristematic cambium, right? No, right. Vascular cambium. I'm confusing terms here. The green stuff. All right. Cleft grafting. So, timing. The rootstock's buds are swollen up to leaf emergence, so that rootstock or the tree you're grafting onto can be leafed out. It's okay. The signwood must be dormant, as we said before. We're going to use a pruning cut to, cut on a rootstock. It can be anything from, a little branch to up to 4 inches in diameter.
Although, cleft graft usually
4-inch, you're going to have difficult. But you could do it. You could do a cleft graft if you split it in two ways on the side, but we won't get into that. But yeah, usually smaller limbs.
Yeah, if someone asked me to do it, it's usually something that I just didn't feel comfortable on a bark graft, so it's maybe 2 inches or less.
2 inches, yeah. Yeah, and this one's probably the most, it's pretty simple, and I have to say, I think it does have good success because you really get good unionization because it's tight. If you do it right, it should really clamp down the rootstock onto the signwood. So what we do is we do leave a nurse limb, and you're gonna remove any branches, most of them below the cut portion where you're gonna stick it onto the rootstock. And Cornell recommends we do it a nurse limb, so leave one branch underneath to kind of keep that stem alive.
Yeah, within a foot of your graft is usually pretty good.
Yeah,
keeps things flowing. But also you want to prune away anything above it. We can't let this thing get shaded out.
Right. That's important. It needs light. You can't be grafting in the shade.
Right.
Yeah. No light, and it's just going to shrivel up and die. This is a technique I borrowed from Malcolm Olson, and he says he bevels his pruning cut. He'll take it and just smooth it out, because you can make that cut with your saw, and he'll actually go around with his box cutter or whatever.
Yep.
Razor blade. He always uses a box cutter, not even a grafting knife, because if they get dull, he just replaces them.
Yeah, cheap blades. Don't have to take time to sharpen in the field.
That's all he uses. And then bevel the edge, make it smooth. But I don't know. So like John says, place the graft where it's free to grow. And try, if you can, perpendicular to the ground. You don't have to. But in the wind, it can be better if it's perpendicular, meaning the growth of the signwood is going to grow perpendicular from the ground.
So straight up.
Yeah, straight up. So that's something to think about.
Well, the other thing is, it might be less likely for a little Tweety bird or something to land on it.
Tweety bird.
those hours or days right after you do it, it's pretty sensitive. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't mess with it at all. So that bird lands on it, it might be done.
Yep. And it's got to be 6 feet off the ground. Then you use a jackknife and you pound on it with your hammer or whatever. You need something to make right through the center, and you make a slit. And then you can use a screwdriver or anything to open up that slit.
Kind of like splitting firewood.
Yeah, exactly. And then you're gonna insert your signwood in there. But on the end of your signwood, you make a pie, right, or a wedge.
Right.
And obviously this is hard to get across on the radio. But, we do Catskill Forest Association does have an apple tree grafting program where we can come and graft a variety show you how to do it right there and then at your property. But yeah, you make a wedge on the signwood, insert it in, then remove your screwdriver or whatever, and now it clamps down on it. That's pretty much it.
Other than sealing it up.
Now that's the second most important part. So now you got your signwood in there. Now you got to seal it up, all the cut portions, seal it with grafting wax. Okay. Anything that was finely cut along where the signwood meets the rootstock. Then you paint it with this stuff is awesome. What is it called? Doc Farwell's grafting paint.
Yeah, Doc Farwell's grafting sealant, and it's the yellow. He has two, right? It's the yellow label. It's the yellow product.
It's awesome.
It's what we use. It's awesome.
Yep. So when it hardens, it's very smooth.
Not sure, though. You may only be able to get that by the gallon, though.
It's expensive.
Yeah, and you can do years worth of grafting on the homeowner scale if you bought a gallon.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then that's about it. I mean, then it's just waiting and watching, and hopefully you did it right, and it takes off. You know, it'll be delayed. It won't start growing right away.
Do you still put a bag over the cleft grafts?
So you can do that. The cleft grafts, that's what Malcolm Olson used to do. He used to put a plastic bag over the grafts, and then a paper bag so they don't get too hot, and then then tie it off to the stem. And then what he used to say is when the buds of your graft are about half the size of a squirrel's ears, you take it off. Now, I don't know what squirrel's ears exactly is, but a quarter inch? I don't know.
Something like that.
So
if squirrel season's open, first you go get a squirrel.
Right.
And then you measure its ear.
Right, you compare it.
Then you may have to take your bag off. If it's a really ugly graft, make sure the bag stays on.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm just joking around now.
All right, so that's cleft grafting. Bark grafting is, I think, the most practical way to graft. It's much simpler, and I think you have more success with it as far as timing. You know, there's a wider window, I think, for it, but maybe not.
And I think the most important thing is you have more chances of success. So with a cleft graft, you really only have two chances. There's two pieces of sinewood, one on each side of your split, unless you did Ryan's fancy four-way split he described that I can't picture in my brain.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that just at the edge of that diameter, you would make your splits towards the edge instead of the center.
Now you've got two rows of it.
Now you have four chances again.
Okay, I see it now.
Yeah.
Like an H pattern almost.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't do that, most cleft grafts, especially if it's small, you know, 2 inches or less, you're only going to fit two on there. So say you misalign both of them. Sorry, it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Versus on a bark graft, you might be able to fit 3 to 7, depending on the diameter of your cut, which we'll talk about in a second.
Yeah, so preparing the rootstock, you make your pruning cut again. You can go up to 4 inches. You can go even more. I've seen people do more than that. And, you know, this is typically in April and May when we're doing this. You can leave your nurse limb again just underneath your graft. And about every... what is it? About every 2 inches or so in the circumference of that stem, we're going to make a slit on the bark, about 1.5 inches down, and then peel it back with the end of your knife or whatever. And that's where we're going to make in that slit. We're going to insert our sinewood.
Yeah, and that time of year, especially towards the middle of our window there, so last couple of weeks of April, first couple of weeks of May, that bark really just peels.
Yeah.
It's so easy to get it in there. Sometimes if you do it early enough in April, it might be tough to work with. But, first week of May is great. And you can peel that bark back, slide your wedge-shaped sinewood end in there. And I don't know. I like to make it kind of long if I'm doing a bark graft because you can really put it down in there. I just feel like there's more opportunity, more surface area for unionization that way.
Makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is grafting wild apple trees. Now we're talking about bark grafting, and next we'll talk about installing the sinewood into that slit that you just made along the bark.
Well, I thought about the army. Dad said, son, you're fucking high. And I thought, yeah, there's a first for everything. So I took my own. Mustache and a
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. And tonight's topic is grafting wild apple trees. So, bark grafting. And installing the signwood. We're going to make our slits along the circumference of that stem, about 1.5 inches or so long. Peel it back with the end of your knife. And then now you have your you make your wedges at the end of your signwood, and you're going to insert them into that bark graft after peeling it back and place in the slit. Usually there's always a thicker side of your signwood that goes in towards the slit.
Yeah, because you're making a wedge just with your hand. It's like whittling. So you can't be perfect. It's always a thick and thin side.
Yeah. Then really what's really important is dressing the signwood. I think a lot of people don't seal it up and it dries out. It can't dry out.
Right.
If there's no moisture in there, you're not going to have that, probably not going to have that unionization between the vascular cambium, the green stuff. That's what's going on. So, again, we do both. Well, here's the thing. So once you put it in that slit, there's not much friction sometimes. So what you do is you tape it. You can tape around the circumference to hold in those cuttings a little more. And then, well, actually, we actually put the wax on first, then put the tape on, don't we?
Yeah, we wax all our cut slits.
Yeah.
And around where that signwood wedged in, because the bark is always going to flare around. It's not a perfect fit. So you got to prevent airflow from getting in there and drying it out. So wax it first, and then, like Ryan said, tape it in. That puts pressure around the bark. It's going to put pressure around the signwood pieces. So, again, that little bird flies over and lands on it. It's not going to bend it over and make it fall out.
You hope. Sometimes it still happens.
It could. It could. Yeah. Most of the time. So this is the good thing about it, though, because on your 4-inch diameter or 3-inch diameter, you probably just fit 4 or more pieces of signwood on there. So what? One chance is gone when that little birdie lands on it and maybe breaks it off, and still got 3 more chances.
Yeah.
Because you only need one. So, yeah, we put on multiple pieces. And in the end, even if all of them survive, you might prune off 2 or 3 the first year in the first dormant season. And eventually you just want one. Now that's going to take over that whole cut and grow your tree.
Yeah, that grafting wax, that Gashel's grafting wax, it's like putty.
Like Play-Doh.
Yeah, Play-Doh. That's it. And it's amazing stuff. It lasts a long time. So wrap it around. Do your grafting wax, then wrap your tape around. Then it's time to paint. You know, take out the Doc Farwell's, paint up that whole thing. And it's yellow probably to reflect sunlight as well.
Yeah.
You don't want to use black. They have that Arbor Coat that you can buy more readily. It's black, so it's going to absorb sunlight and probably fry the stem, to be honest with you.
What about if you can't get a hold of Doc Farwell's? Can you just paint it?
You can do Arbor Coat and then paint white latex paint over that to reflect the light now.
Okay.
It's just more time consuming.
More materials.
Yeah, but you can do that. Cool. That's fine. Yeah, you can definitely get Arbor Coat more readily, but if it's a small enough stem, you could just use Doc Gashel's and just put the wax on. It'd be fine. So, all right, you got that all set up. Now let's talk about aftercare, which is the last portion of tonight's talk with grafting apple trees. Basically, if it grows too much, and this can happen, this is a good problem. If it grows like 3 feet, it's going to become too whippy, and it's going to break off in the wind, right? Also, you want to choose the best one. On a 4-inch stem, you're going to get at least 4, maybe 4 to 6, well, maybe even 8, 4 to 8 signwoods on there, cuttings. Now, you're only going to choose maybe the best 2 or 3 that by the next year. And you can prune your grafts during the dormant season or during the winter. But you eventually you have to cut off your precious grafts.
It's hard.
Which is difficult. Yeah. You only need one eventually to fill this space. What else, John? What do you think? Oh, remove any stems along the base of it, too. You don't want anything to be growing. You don't want them to suck the energy out of your graft. You want all the energy of that stem going towards your signwood.
Right, and you could be doing that throughout the summer. If there's some suckering going on the stem just below your grafts, you could be pinching those buds off if you're paying attention to it. That way, you got all that energy going into your graft, and it's not getting potentially shaded out, because we've gone back and pruned grafts that are 1 and 2 years old, and the suckers that have grown around it beginning to choke it out. It really just takes away its potential.
Yeah. So if it keeps going up, meaning your stem is just, you know, it's too vigorous and it's getting high, you gotta cut back the terminal bud, right? And you could cut it back by a third or whatever. That way you can inspire some lateral growth, some lateral branches, because, hey, that's what produces fruit anyway, is lateral branches. So start to shape it right from the beginning. Don't let it go up like a snow cone, you know, so much so that it becomes this tall, vigorous sprout thing growing.
Right, because it's not going to produce much fruit for you, and it's going to be harder than heck to ever prune again into a tree. And if it does start getting really whippy the first year, you could splint it. We've used bamboo stakes, but you can use anything to hold that thing up until it's time to prune. The best time to prune is going to be the dormant season, so January through March.
Yeah. Now, you'll get people asking about grafting pears to apples and peaches and everything. I guess you can do that, but it doesn't really take that readily, if at all. Pears, when pears take, they really grow. And if you have an ornamental pear, use it as a rootstock, put on a kefir or a Bartlett, and if it takes, they grow, man.
Oh, yeah. You'll see it grow 6 feet or more in 2 years.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to watch. So a lot of people have these, what's that ornamental pear people have planted all over the place? It's not Aristocrat, although it's a new one. Well, I can't remember the name of it, but basically people plant them in cities and landscapes and whatnot. But you can graft onto those ornamental pears, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, those street trees.
Bradford pear.
Those street trees, they also often have tight crotch unions, and they start falling apart. So you can correct that form by starting it over.
Yeah. So, and also, I guess the Bradford pear is just, I've heard from other people who do grafting as well, it's just a great rootstock anyway to use. It's very hardy, disease resistant. However, like John says, it usually has poor form, which is why it's not really planted as much anymore. There's other varieties that people use now. But what else we got? That's all I got on grafting. And grafting season's coming. April and May is when the Catskill Forest Association grafts. And it's a lot of fun to watch stuff grow. There's an apple tree that was in the front of CFA's office. It was just an ornamental apple of some sort. And one day I just went to town on it about 6 or 7 years ago and took a variety from up in Huckleberry Hill on a member's property and plopped it on that one. You can't even tell it was grafted.
Yeah, what's cool about it is you look at the stem. It was because it was grafted at about 4 feet or so. You look at the stem versus the tree itself, you can see the bark difference. But other than that, you wouldn't know. I mean, it's how tall? It's got to be 10 or 12 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe more.
Oh, it's taller than that.
And it can be climbed by a child.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is tall. The reason why I grafted lower on that one is because our office is in a weird position where deer don't go there. Yeah, just by the fence behind us in Route 28, it's fenced in on three sides, and I've only seen a deer out of the 14 years at CFA once.
And it was a rutting buck running through the parking lot.
Yeah, that's weird as hell. Yeah, I've seen only one deer tracks, and I think that was the week it happened. So you can get away with that. But in most places, you're going to have to graft at least 6 feet.
Yeah. Right. But no, grafting's a lot of fun. It, like we said, we'd be happy to give you a lesson on it through Catskill Forest Association, April, May. If you call our office, you can get more information that way. 586-3054. But it's something that you can play with, and take a tree that's like we said in the beginning, maybe something on the back 40 or a volunteer on an old pasture somewhere and convert it and put two or three or more varieties onto it and watch it grow over time. The good thing about it is it has the potential to produce fruit in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
I think the one that at the office flowered the third year, fourth year, fruited the fifth, and we got a few fruits last year too. But it's
apples last year. It was just bad year for fruit.
Yeah.
But
dropped off.
Yeah, dropped off. Pears, if you have wild pears, you can graft onto those. I think pears are great. I think they're underplanted in the Catskills, although some areas it seems like you plant them and they don't have enough time to ripen, but it's another story. But that's all the time we got on From the Forest, and see you next week.
All right, good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest. Jet soars above the canyon streets, and the con man con, but life goes on, for the city never sleeps.